it turned on. I forgot to turn it off this morning. And there's a way out there talking to somebody and they heard me talking here. It's one of the difficulties you get. By the way, Wednesday night, being the first Wednesday of the month, is supposed to be the night in which there's an emphasis on missionary work. And you heard this morning how that a son had to correct his father and tell him he made a mistake. It's awful when the children have got to correct the parents, isn't it? And while they were expecting the missionary on Wednesday, learned he's not coming until following week, isn't it? However, let me explain something to you. About a month ago, I spent some time with Dr. Rob Linstead. Some of you may know about him, others don't. But at the present time, he's over in Russia. He went away back to Russia the week after I saw him. And he's been with the team going up and down the Volga, holding gospel campaigns and also distributing thousands of copies of the Bible. It's a rather interesting thing, but he told us then that they're facing a great number of difficulties. One of the difficulties is that the cults are just pressing in there because the door has been opened. Jehovah's Witnesses are putting their all into it to get in there. And of course you have the Muslims, they're busy. And the Mormons are busy. And he says in some of those little towns and villages, it's whoever gets in first captures the mind of the people. Some places where they were holding campaigns, the people were lined up an hour and a half before time for the service starting. And it was awful, they said, when they had to shut the doors and keep some of them out. 3,000 people inside, and they couldn't let in any more. And so they announced there would be two services. If they'd just wait, there would be a second service. And these people stood outside in line all the time that the first service was going on, waiting to get in for the next service. Now, he told us that, and our brother Bruce Simpkins was telling us he heard on the news today how that the Jehovah's Witnesses are really making an effort to get a hold over there. And then the Greek Orthodox Church there, they are making complaints. They're trying to get a law passed now that no foreign missionaries will be allowed in to hold services unless they're given a permit from them or from the authorities. So you see, brothers and sisters, it's not easy. Pray for that work. Now, I have one of those tapes that you, cassette things that you put in and show on the screen. I'm hoping perhaps on Wednesday night we'll get it set up and show it. For it's one of the silent ones, of course, but I'll be able to explain some of the things as it was explained to us. And I'll let you see this, how they're distributing the Bibles to the different little towns and villages up and down the Volga River. They've been traveling in this boat from Moscow down to Petersburg. So he says these Russian people who have been sort of liberated are anxious for something. It'll help us to pray intelligently for the work there. Souls are being saved. The work going on. Thousands of people coming out to listen to the word. I wish we could see that here in this country. To think that a country that for years wouldn't allow the gospel to be preached, and Christians had to go underground, as it were, and hide. Now their gates are open and they're gasping for the Bibles. You'll see on the picture even an old woman who got a Bible and kissing the Bible. First Bible she'd ever possess. And here in this country is being despised and being sent out of our schools and so on. So just you come along on Wednesday night, we'll try and get the brethren to understand about this thing, for I don't see if they get this thing to work, and we'll show you those pictures of what's going on in the Volga. It is on, isn't it? Is that it now? It's off? On. Fine. That's fine. Takes time. I'm not an electrician. I don't understand all these things. Now tonight we're going to look at the book of Genesis chapter 16. Chapter 16, it's quite a short chapter. We'll read it. Now Sarai, Abraham's wife, bare him no children, and she had a handmaid, an Egyptian whose name was Hagar. Sarai said unto Abram, behold now, the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid, maybe that I may obtain children by her. Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. And he went in unto Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. Sarai said unto Abram, my wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom. And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. But Abram said unto Sarai, behold, thy maid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. Sarai dealt hardly with her. She fled from her face. And the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. He said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, whence camest thou? Whither wilt thou go? She said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarai. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, return to thy mistress and submit thyself unto her hands. The angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. Angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child, shalt bear a son, shalt call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. He will be a wild man. His hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him. He shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. She called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, thou God seest me. For she said, have I also here looked after him that seeth me? Wherefore the well was called Beer Lehi-Roi. Behold, it is between Kadesh and Bered. Hagar bare Abram a son. Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bare Ishmael to Abram. Just the Lord will bless the reading of the chapter. I might just say this, under normal circumstances, preachers, including myself, would very rarely choose this chapter from which to minister the word. But since we've been going through incidents in the life of Abraham, we must not pass this one by. This chapter provides, as it were, another dark, dark shadow which fell across the life of Abram, reminding us that Abram was not a perfect man. The man of flesh and blood like ourselves made mistakes. This chapter he was caused to turn aside for a season from the path of simple and happy confidence in God. You see, in chapter 15, he listened to God. Remember that? And he believed. That was the great verse. He believed God and it was counted unto him for righteousness. That's chapter 15. But watch the inconsistencies in this man's life. While in chapter 15, he listened to God and believed, in chapter 16, he listened to Sarai and erred. It's very serious, you know. As long as Adam in the garden listened to God day after day in the cool of the day, things were all right. But when he listened to Eve, things went wrong. Why didn't he keep listening to God? As long as Abraham listened to God and believed God, things were right. But when he gave his ear to the suggestions of Sarai, things went wrong. He was inconsistent. In chapter 15, he had faith to believe God. Now that's a wonderful thing, to have faith in God. But in chapter 16, he lacked the patience to wait God's time. Now it's one thing to believe God. It's an altogether different thing to have the patience to wait God's time. Now put that test to each of us. Isn't it true there have been times in your life when you've gone down in bended knee and you've cried to the Lord? You've asked God for something. You've asked God to do something. But you've wanted God to do it in your time. You think that God should do it right there. Perhaps you want him to do it the very day that you pray, or the very hour, and it doesn't happen that way. You see, you've got to wait God's time. Faith is confidence in God. God will not move before the time, and he'll not be late. If God's going to do it, he'll do it exactly at his time. Abraham believed God, chapter 15. He lacked the patience to wait God's time. He believed in chapter 15 when God made the promise that he would multiply his seed as the stars of heaven. He believed that. At the same time, when you come to chapter 16, he sought to promote God's promise in the energy of the flesh. You know, in the energy of the flesh, he couldn't have produced one star. And the Bible says God made the stars also. And they're still finding out the millions and millions of stars that are in God's great universe. And God just made the stars. God says, I'll make your seed as the stars in the firmament. And he believed that. But he thought in chapter 16 that he would have to help God along. And so the energy of the flesh comes into action in chapter 16. Now the scheme that comes into prominence here is a very subtle thing. I want you to remember for a moment where Abram came from. You remember going back to chapter 12, God of glory appeared to him when he was down in Ur of the Chaldees. Remember, he was an idolater, raised in an idolatrous environment, raised as it were in an idolatrous home. All he knew in his early days was that men worshipped idols and they had their altars. Yet the God of glory appeared to that man and called him out from that. But while he left Ur of the Chaldees at God's calling, there were certain things he brought with him. Of course, you've seen already that he brought Lot with him, whom he should have left behind perhaps. For he was to leave his country, he was to leave his kindred, he was to leave his father's home. God called Abram. And it's only after Abram is left alone that God begins to deal with him, really. But having come from Ur of the Chaldees, there are certain things that he brought with him. Customs, if you like. And might I say this, it's very, very difficult for a person to leave customs that they've been used to in their early days. For instance, now, it's very simple, isn't it? A young couple gets married. That's a normal thing to do. Sorry for those that never get married, that they've lost something in life perhaps, although they don't think so. But they get married. And everything seems to go all right up to a point. And she does her best at the cooking, or baking, as the case may be. And she tries her hand at making something. And of course, he passes a comment. And he usually says, "That's not the way my mother did it." And that can cause an awful trouble, can't it? "How did your mother do it?" "That's not the way my mother cooked it." What's he doing? His mind is going back to traditional ideas of the home. "This is the way I was brought up. This was the way it was done. This was the way it was cooked. This was the way it was served. In our house we did it this way." See? Why? He's coming back now to thoughts of what used to be. You carry these things with you. See, I know something about it. I moved from one country to another. And you don't think there's any strange things in the South, do you? You don't think there's anything strange about grits, do you? Or you offer them to a Yankee and see what he'll say. "I never saw cornbread until I came here. I'd never heard of the thing." But you never tasted haggis, have you? No. Oh, it's lovely. It's the chieftain of the pudding race. They're different customs, and you bring those customs with you. That's what Abram did. He brought customs with him. What were those customs? He wants to help on God's purposes. He needs to have a son. Why? He's now 86 years of age. And God says your seed's going to be as numberless as the stars in the heavens. "I'm 86 and I don't even have a child. I don't have a son to carry on the name. I'll have to do something about it." Don't you believe God? Yes. Sarah says, "Now, Abram, I've got the solution to your problem. For instance, now, here's my servant, Hagar, the maid. Suppose I give you Hagar, the maid. She can become your wife for a night." You say, that was awful. No, it wasn't awful. That was a custom. See, they didn't live in a Christian age. That was a Babylonish custom. And they brought the Babylonish custom with them. They should have left it behind. When he came out following the God of glory, he should have been prepared now to walk in the path that was well pleasing to God, await God's time. "Oh no," says Sarah, "we'll put into practice this old Babylonish custom. You'll take the handmaid." After all those years, you see, the custom is still in her heart. The second thing is, in this scheme, it involved an Egyptian maid. Where did she get her Egyptian maid? The custom came from Babylon. The maid came from Egypt. Oh, that takes you back again to the end of chapter 12. When he made the mistake of going down to Egypt at the time of testing. He should never have gone down over the borderline into Egypt. He should have remained in the land where God had called him to come to. He should have remained in Palestine. He went down to Egypt. It's perfectly true he made mistakes while he was there, but he came out from Egypt enriched with goods. And it's obvious he brought with him servants, including Hagar. Now remember, Egypt is always indicative in the Word of God of the world. And the world will never be the friend of the believer. They found Hagar, the Egyptian maid, and they brought her out. She's now one of the crowd. If they had never gone down to Egypt, there would be no Egyptian maid. But there she was. So there was a Babylonish practice. There was the Egyptian maid. And it was a fleshly expedient, well thought out by Sarah. We'll put this old practice into effect. You can have the Egyptian maid. And if a child is born, it'll be mine. I'll claim the child. You know, there's a little couplet that says, "If O mortal man, of one false step beware, for one false step may bring an age of care." And that's what it did here. A false step. It brought into effect the man called Ishmael. It caused trouble in Abram's house. Caused trouble between him and his wife. Caused trouble between Sarai and Hagar the servant. In later years, there was a development of things. The descendants of Ishmael became the sworn enemies of the Israelites. Oh, it started off with Ishmael and Isaac at variance. One despising the other. Their descendants grew up the sworn enemies. Caused trouble with the two nations. It comes right down to the present day, and you and I are facing the effects and the results of this one false step. The great trouble in the Middle East today, and the blight of Islam over the world. You wouldn't have had any of these Muslim mosques going around if it hadn't been for the false step of Abraham in chapter 16. You see, my friend, it may seem a very small thing to you or to some folks when such mistakes are made, such sins committed, but the after effects are tremendous. But there they are. Hagar, the Egyptian maid. If she had never been in the family, if she had never been there as a servant, this would never have taken place. What are the lessons? We should learn this lesson. We should exercise patience and wait God's time. Never try to produce spiritual fruit in the energy of the flesh. Again, right ends never justify wrong methods. We reap according to what we sow. One great lesson. God's delays are not God's denials. For example, how often have people suggesting to others that they're doing they've got the right motive, we've got the right end in view, we know what we want to do, but they go the wrong way about it. See, God's work has got to be done according to God's will. If we want to do what God wants, then we should do it according to God's word. There are a great many people today who look back on life and they say, "Oh, if only I had known." The point is, perhaps it was our own fault that we didn't know. If we'd be more careful to listen to God, and go according to what the Word teaches, these things would not have come upon us. You see, if you're going to take a Babylonish practice and say, well, everybody else is doing it, it's quite legal, is it honoring to God? You see, if you're going to take the history of Babylon and you go way back to the time when they built the Tower of Babel, it was built in defiance of God, and that which pertains to Babylon is opposed to God. We'll build a tower. That tower will represent the heavens. It was to be a religious gathering center where they would be worshipping the stars based on astrology. By the way, does it disgust you any when you pick up a paper today and find almost half a page given to astrology? What the stars speak? Will this be your lucky day? And so on. What are they trying to prove? Why should such things have a place in a daily newspaper? And yet, go into bookstores today and you'll find shelf after shelf of books dealing with astrology. It's accepted, but it's in opposition to God. God came down at that time and destroyed the tower and caused the confusion of language. That was the beginning of Babylon. Then you remember the time when the great power of Babylon was overthrown. That night when Belshazzar was having his immoral feast. That was the night he was slain. And the Medes and the Persians came in and overthrew the great Babylonian empire. But the great spirit of Babylon is still going on. It's in the world today. A man wrote a great volume, perhaps some of you have it in your bookshelves, dealing with the two Babylons. Oh, it's still with us. And when you come to the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation, Babylon will be destroyed. Religious Babylon will be destroyed. Political Babylon will be destroyed. Economic Babylon will be destroyed. That which pertains to Babylon is opposed to God. Babylonish practices are condemned by God. Egyptian maid. That which pertains to Egypt pertains to the world. Do you think the world's getting any better? My friend, if you think that, you haven't been reading the Word of God. These last days, evil men and seducers sort of wax worse and worse. We've got poorer leadership in the world today than ever we've had. There doesn't seem to be a proper leader throughout the whole world. Not one. And they're going to get worse. And even the final one will come along and they'll accept him and he'll have tremendous power. He's opposed to God. He's opposed to God's Christ. He'll set himself up as if he were God, sitting in the temple in Jerusalem. He'll cause men to worship him or his idol. That's what the world's heading for. The world is not your friend. The world is opposed to every believer. Beware of the Egyptian maid. Fleshly expedient. I believe in religious circles today we're seeing more fleshly expedients than we've ever seen before. Some of them are in jail, and some of them should be, for what they're doing under the name of religion. Religion is corrupt today. Absolutely corrupt. And you know it. I know it. And the flesh has got in. And instead of the Spirit of God being allowed to work and prove His power, He's been voted out. Voted out. Some years ago, there was a conference held in the city of London. It was held under the auspices, and I'm going to state it. I have no axe to grind. I'll give you the truth. It was under the guidance of the Four Square Gospel Men's Businessmen's Organization. I say it was under the Four Square because that's a different organization from the ordinary Christian businessmen. Under the Four Square Businessmen's Organization. It's held in London. There was a doctor there in the audience, and I have the report of that doctor being there and what he said about it. He went there in order to find out all that was going on in the big, big auditorium in the city of London. And he said, there were different men giving addresses, and then it was thrown open for testimonies, testimony time. And he said they were jumping up here and there, and he said they all seemed to go on the same system. They tell exactly when they made their commitment to Christ. And then at a certain date, sometime subsequent to that, they had another experience called the baptism of the Spirit. And they were able to speak with tongues and so on. And up jumps one woman, and she went over the same system, but instead of saying she began to speak in tongues, she began to yatter away something that nobody understood, whatever it was. And when she sat down, up got another one. And this was going on until the man in the chair rose and used the mallet and said, no, order please. He said, we've had enough of the Spirit, we'll have to get on with the program now. These are the folks who claim that they've got a great monopoly of the Spirit. If this was off the Spirit, if it was off the Spirit, why didn't you let the Spirit go on? If it was his responsibility to conduct and keep the order, then it wasn't the Spirit's order. It was his order. You see how stupid some people can be in what they say. But in ordinary church life today, the energy of the flesh has got in to such an extent, the Spirit is voted out. The Spirit wants to use God's people. He'll use you. He'll use me. Use everyone else who are submissive to Him. But we mustn't let the world get in, and we mustn't let the fleshly expedient get in, and we mustn't let the Babylonish practice get in. For when these things get in, God is on the outside. The Spirit is on the outside. And it's like the Laodicean church, where he's standing at the door and saying, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come in and will sup with him, and he with me. Now look for a moment or two, very specially, we'll focus in on this Egyptian maid. The insolence she manifested towards Sarai. Now remember, she was the servant maid under the authority of her mistress. Now the mistress made the mistake of giving her to Abram, and now when she realizes she's going to be the mother of a child to Abraham, she shows nothing but insolence to her mistress. That's exactly what they'll do. I was looking in the paper the other day, and a picture of a boy with a with some big snake all curled round about here. I thought to myself, how stupid can anybody be? I don't care whether it's a big one or a little one. I just chop their head off if I see them. I don't care whether they're green, brown, or black. They're all snakes to me. I don't want them near me. I don't trust them. But if people are going to play with serpents or snakes and they get bitten, they're themselves to blame. And if people play with sin and it bites like the serpent, you have yourself to blame. You can't play with these things and get off with it. Whatsoever we sow, we reap. She gave her to Abraham, and then she had to take insolence from her. Impudence, if you like. Despised her. But Sarah wasn't going to take it. And now remember, it was her fault to begin with, although she was blaming now the handmaid, and she was also blaming Abram. It was she who suggested it. And in jealousy, she started to deal with the handmaid. But it was too late. Oh, the ill treatment she gave that Egyptian maid. Now, I want you to think of that Egyptian maid for a moment. Put yourself in her position. She wasn't to blame. Of course, perhaps she was to blame when it came the time when she was giving a lot of insolence to her mistress. She had no right doing that. And then she got it back. And one day she got out of the house. Where was she going, do you think? Where would you have gone? She set her face back towards Egypt. That's where she was going. Back to Egypt. That's where she came from. And she was going back. How she ever expected to get there, I don't know. But she ran out anyway. Have you ever found people doing it? Trying to run away from one situation, not knowing where they were going, not knowing how to get there? That's what she was trying. And it was a blessing that God broke in. There was the interest of the angel in Hagar. Hagar, how did you get here? Where are you going? Good questions. How did you get here? Where do you expect to go? Then he gave us some instructions. Return again to your place. And what? Submit to Sarah. She's your mistress. Go in and submit. Take your rightful place. God will deal with it. And then she received some information. She said, that child that's to be born will be a son. She knew before the time that she was going to be the mother of a little boy. More than that, we'll tell you what his name's to be. He's to be called Ishmael. And his nature would manifest it. The time came when the child was born. Ishmael. What a name. Ishmael standing in contrast to Isaac, who was born 13 years later. The one was the child of the flesh. The other was the child of the spirit. For when Isaac was born, it was beyond the power of Sarah or Abraham to have that child. They had to wait God's time. When the flesh was dead, as it were, and couldn't produce for God, God gave the power. He gave the strength. So says Hebrews 11. And Sarah was able to bear seed. Of course, that comes out in a later chapter. But here is the bringing forth of Ishmael. I remind you, Ishmael himself was the enemy of Isaac. His descendants were the enemies of the descendants of Isaac. And today you and I are suffering from the mistake recorded here in Genesis chapter 16. Oh, let us beware. Beware of one false step. And if there has been, the place to put it right is get back to where it was put wrong. And get before God. Get that thing put right in absolute submission to the will of God. Let us bow together and ask our brother Lacey to dismiss us with a word of prayer.